This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
I wanted to speak about equanimity and acceptance and love. Equanimity, acceptance, and love. Because in Buddhist practice, there's a very close relationship between allowing, and the arising of love. Not the love of, first romantic love. Not that love. The love, a love that's very infused with wisdom. And love, from this perspective, is really a product of connecting to ourselves, to our moment-by-moment experience, connecting with others. And when I say connecting with others, what that really means is connecting with ourselves in the presence of others. Right? Connecting with what's arising as we're with another human being. And that as we connect and connect, and sustain that, something like love arises. But to connect takes equanimity and acceptance. So I want to speak about equanimity and introduce this and talk a bit about its relationship to accepting things versus making changes. Because equanimity does not mean we don't make changes. And then talk a little bit about how this kind of equanimity facilitates self-love. Kind of gentle, loving relationship with ourselves and with others. Again, referring to my it's been my main teacher, Shinzen Young, has defined mindfulness in a unique way. I think it's helpful. It's quite different from the traditional Theravadin Pali Sutta version of what mindfulness is. But he calls it a threefold skill set. Threefold skill set. That mindfulness is composed of concentration, clarity, and equanimity. Concentration being the ability to attend to whatever we decide we want to attend to. And clarity being a kind of high resolution, moment by moment knowing of what's arising. It refers also to this untangling of thinking and feeling, sight and sound. And then equanimity, the subject for tonight, which is defined as a kind of balanced internal state, is actually how it gets translated. The root, I think the Greek root of the word. But what it means is a deep willingness to be with what's arising without fighting. A radical permission to feel, as my teacher calls it. A radical permission to feel. And a non-interference with our experience. So letting go of the push and pull. Right? And equanimity, this kind of acceptance, is often all that we have that can make suffering better. That we find ourselves in situations where we just can't escape the physical or emotional pain of the moment. And this equanimity is a kind of non-interference and not creating any additional friction with the pain or with the pleasure, for that matter. And this willingness to expose the heart to exactly what's arising moment by moment. But equanimity in this sense is only moment by moment, right? Moment by moment. It's not a grand kind of plan. It's just moment by moment. And it's usually said that equanimity just takes some time to develop. And that the reason we practice, the reason we go on meditation retreats in part, is just to develop equanimity. To develop patience and tolerance with experiences that we'd rather not have. And one of my teachers says there's no shortcut with that. There's no, you can't like fiddle with that. You just have to do it. And a lot of times what happens is the path towards the development of equanimity comes with a fair amount of suffering. So we sort of have to be willing a little bit, at least, to be with unpleasant experience until equanimity starts to develop. But as equanimity takes deeper root, we find that really unpleasant kinds of experiences do not cause the same level of suffering. I don't know if you have that experience. Sometimes if I'm agitated, like if my equanimity level is low, and maybe I'm sitting there on a couch or something, and it's totally comfortable, but if my equanimity level is low, I'll be like, you know, I can't get comfortable scratching, like, oh, what do I want? I want this, that, maybe I want something to drink, do I want, you know, that kind of mode of being, where you're sort of like constantly adjusting the self, right? Like, constantly trying to, like, sort of, you know, maneuver your way out of little painful experience. Mm-hmm. You know? When my equanimity level is low, I'll do that. And I'll just keep trying to tweak my world until I get comfortable enough. But the problem's not the world. The problem there is the level of equanimity. Because many of us have noticed we can't get totally comfortable. We just can't get totally comfortable all the time. And so the fiddling gets us some relief, but it's very fleeting. And we're actually kind of feeding fuel to the kind of impulsive, agitated fires within us. Yeah. And so the way that we know equanimity is established and being sustained is we're just not suffering much. And so the formula that my teacher has given is that suffering is actually pain times resistance. Resistance being basically non-equanimity. That there's pain, and that's, the Buddha never promised an end to pain. But as the level of resistance comes down, or as we could say, as the level of equanimity comes up, difficult experience becomes so much more bearable. And we actually can envision ourselves being totally happy, even amidst what may be, in that moment, very unpleasant. And the equanimity can deepen so much that we can be even in the midst of very painful experience, and we can honestly say in that moment that if the pain persisted eternally, we would be able to live a full and complete open-hearted life. Now that creates a lot of confidence in the mind as we begin to be able to metabolize difficult experience. And it comes through this equanimity. This is in an attempt to create equanimity in the mind and body. This is what Shinzen says. He says, maintain a continuous relaxed state over your whole body as sensations, pleasant, unpleasant, strong, subtle, physical, emotional, wash through. And let go of negative judgments about what you're experiencing and replacing them with an attitude of loving acceptance and gentle matter-of-factness. So with this theme of acceptance, sometimes the way that it's perceived is that it means we should never do anything to improve our lives or the lives of others. It's like, okay, teacher said accept, right? The moment by moment we do. Moment by moment we can deeply accept what's arising. But from that deep acceptance, may come very forceful action. And in fact, I would say that as we accept what's arising moment by moment, the path to clear, effective action becomes becomes clarified. When we're not reacting out of our kind of habit energies, when we've actually, because habit energy is really a lack of equanimity. Habit energy is a lack of equanimity. So when we're reacting without that equanimity, we're actually probably not being as effective as we can be in the world. So Gil Fronsdal says, you know, if you step on a nail, you don't keep like walking down the street with the nail going further into your foot, right? That's like, anytime Buddhism starts to sound insane, it's like you kind of know that you're misconceiving it in some way. It's like, no, that's insane, right? That cannot be what this teaching means. Continue walking down the street with the nail in the foot. What's being pointed to is that in that moment, the experience of pain in the foot actually does not have to be met with hatred. But in accepting that difficult experience, like wisdom will tell us to pull that out. And we're running a little low on time, but I wanted to read something about from Martin Luther King, who is embodying this equanimity, and yet it led to such clear, forceful, effective action. And so he, in this quote, he pledges to live according to love. But it's a love, and it's a kind of open-heartedness that propelled him to change the course of our history, right? So equanimity is not opposed to action. And for me, in my experience, it's been very important in coming into a kinder relationship to myself. And sometimes when we think about self-love, we think about kind of like making a list of our good qualities, and where we say like, yeah, I'm good at that. Yeah, I love myself for that. Yeah, that. And then we have this other list, what makes us useless creature, as one of my teachers says, what hopeless lump of self, something like that. All the things that we feel like make us, that compromise our value as a human being, right? And these kind of lists sort of duel one another. And when this side is winning, we say we're loving ourselves. And when this side is winning, we're hating ourselves. But in my experience, self-love is much more just like, is so closely tied to just acceptance. Accepting my own vulnerability, that I can, just the simple fact that I can be hurt physically and emotionally. Just the humility of like sensing that. Connecting with all the ways in which I haven't been able to meet some expectation or some ideal. All of the things that I feel like do make me wrong. And as we bring this kind of equanimity to our self-experience, as we bring that, as we begin to let go of all of the yeses and nos, all of the votes for ourself and against ourself, and we just sort of connect with the vulnerability of ourselves. What can happen is the reasons, the very, very causes of self-hatred begins to soften the heart. The very things that caused shame and self-cruelty actually soften the heart. Because in that pain, in the pain of self-cruelty, there's always a story that we need to unearth, that we need to connect with. Always a story of some should, what I should be. So we connect with equanimity, just allowing ourselves just to be as we are. And lastly, the kind of importance of acceptance of others, of equanimity with others, which really means equanimity, as I said, with our own reactions to others, right? That's all we can actually accept. We can't accept them as a human being. We can accept the reactions we're having in our hearts and our minds. I asked a friend who was, she died recently, but she was married, very loving relationship for over 50 years. And I asked what sustained that? And without hesitation, she just said acceptance. And in my own experience, in romantic love and in the family, the lack of acceptance has caused a lot of pain for me. And some of what's hardest to actually accept is seeing someone we love suffer. But this practice of equanimity with being with what's coming up in our own hearts in the face of seeing another person we love suffering. Just being with that, connecting with that. Opens up some space. And so this skill that we're cultivating with of equanimity is a very precious skill. And it can be deepened and deepened again. does help us love ourselves, love others. And as we have more and more confidence in this, we begin to be less and less afraid of our internal world and what may happen to us. Part of why we're such anxious creatures is because we think we can be overwhelmed by pain. And as equanimity deepens, we have more and more confidence that the heart won't be overwhelmed. Now, I don't know how my practice will hold up when someone I love is dying, or when I'm dying, or if there were a nuclear war, or if there, I don't know. I don't know how it would hold up. But I want to strengthen that capacity of the heart every day. And as we practice, we begin to be more and more confident, the heart's capacity to hold what arises. So this is offered for your reflection, and whatever's of use, investigate, and whatever's not, just leave behind. You know, when this stuff resonates, when any of the Dharma resonates, it's because it's like it's in you, you know. Teachers connect some dots, you know, provide a kind of framework for understanding. But when you're there and you're hearing about practice and you're nodding, it's because you know this. Really important to remember.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.